It's Friday, July 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Welcome and hello. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, tensions escalate following two unrelated fatal police shootings in the United States.
We are fighting and we will ultimately win against a form of racialized violence called police misconduct.
We hear from both civil rights activists and the police. Also ahead, the United States imposes sanctions against North Korea's leader. Bangladesh grapples with yet another terror attack. And the silky jazz tones of a Broadway star. It's all on today's International Edition. Fatal police shootings in the U.S. cities of two African-American men in as many days are again raising questions about excessive police force, especially against minorities. An African-American man was fatally shot late Wednesday by a police officer during a traffic stop in the Midwestern city of Falcon Heights, Minnesota. That prompted Governor Mark Dayton to call for an independent federal investigation. 32-year-old Philando Castillo of nearby St. Paul was killed after a policeman pulled over the vehicle with a broken taillight. A child and a woman were passengers in the car when Castillo was killed. The shooting comes one day after police killed 37-year-old Alton Sterling in the southern city of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Two white officers responding to a call about an armed man pinned Sterling to the ground when at least one officer shot him. NAACP President and CEO Cornell Williams-Brooks tells International Edition's David Byrd about his organization's goals following the Minnesota incident.
This is a perilous moment in the country. It is a moment for resolve and for determination. In the last century, the NAACP fought and won against a form of racialized violence called lynching. In this century, we are fighting and we will ultimately win against a form of racialized violence called police misconduct. We saw in the Philando Castile video a young man beside his fiance in front of his daughter carrying a licensed firearm like hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Americans all across the country lose his life being shot while being filmed by his fiance. And when we reach a point in this country where citizens feel they have to film their interactions with the police to ensure their safety, and in this case, she was not and could not ensure the safety of her fiancé, this is a dangerous moment. It is a moment in which the NAACP is going beyond simply protesting and demonstrating, but in fact engaging in policy reform and seeking policy reform. What do we mean? At the federal level, we have to pass the In Racial Profiling Act. We are pushing for the passage of the Law Enforcement Trust and Integrity Act. We're pushing for the establishment of a national standard of excessive use of force so that we have one rule, one measuring rod, one yardstick, if you will, for police misconduct. In state legislatures all across the country, we're pushing for the kinds of reforms that ensure that where you have instances of police misconduct, we have independent inquiries, independent investigations that are transparent, that are timely, and that engender trust.
Meanwhile, a spokesman for the Fraternal Order of Police in Minnesota expressed comments to the media Thursday.
I can't say how seriously I take this. I can't say how shocked I am and how deeply, deeply offended that this would occur in Minnesota to somebody who got pulled over for a taillight being out of order, and how totally unacceptable it is by all the standards and values that I hold dear and that I treasure about this state that such a terrible incident could occur and did occur, and this life is irrevocably taken away. So when I met with some of the people who are gathered outside the governor's residence earlier today, they said that they wanted justice. And I will vow that they will receive justice. And I don't know what course that takes. That will depend upon all the facts and circumstances. But that justice will be served. Justice must be served in this instance if we're going to have a chance to repair the terrible damage that's been done to the relationships we all have with men and women of other races and creeds. And I will do everything I can to see that it comes about. The vast majority of our law enforcement officers of all colors, races, creeds, religions, are dedicated, and they confront difficult situations every day and every night, and they conduct themselves lawfully and honorably. And, you know, one terrible misjudgment or failure of proper action, whatever it turned out to be, could not be allowed to cast aspersions on every other law enforcement officer in Minnesota.
And, of course, in this day and age, just about everything that happens is reflected online in social media. And so we turn to International Edition's social media reporter, G. Abby Lee, who joins me here in Studio 22. She's here with the two hashtags that have been trending throughout Thursday. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim. A lot has happened in the last couple of days on the conflict between the police force and, of course, the African-American communities. The two trending hashtags are hashtag Alton Sterling and hashtag Philando Castile. Now, as you know, both of these men passed away after getting shot by the police in Louisiana and Minnesota, respectively. For the purpose of this segment, let's focus on the latter because the Minnesota incident is more relevant when it comes to social media engagement.
And it was pretty amazing that this particular incident was broadcast on Facebook Live.
Absolutely. And to my knowledge, this is the first time police brutality has been streamed live on social media ever. To repeat what you have said earlier briefly, Philando Castile was shot by a police officer during traffic stop in Minnesota, and after four shots have been fired at his arm, his girlfriend, Diamond Reynolds, streamed the aftermath on Facebook. She claimed he was shot while reaching for his wallet to provide the officer with an ID. She is on Facebook as Lavish Reynolds, and the video is still up on Facebook. It's been about 19 hours since the video was streamed live, and since then more than 4 million people around the world watched it, and almost 300,000 people shared it on Facebook.
And I just want our listeners to know, if you do check out that video, it is quite graphic. I've seen it as well, and I'll bet it has spurred a lot of discussion.
Absolutely. Most notably, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders sent out a number of tweets about the incident, and one of them reads like this. The violence that killed Alton Sterling and Philando Castile has become an all-too-common occurrence for people of color, and in capital letters, it, full stop, must, full stop, stop. People are also sharing a link to the fundraising page to help the Castile family. And before I go, I also want to say that one of the most influential pop stars of our time, Beyoncé, shared a statement on her website. She wrote, "It's up to us to take a stand and demand that they stop killing us." Back to you, Jim.
Well, G, thank you for that wrap-up. You may, as always, tweet your comments and questions to our Twitter stream here at International Edition. It's at VOA underscore IE, and you may find myself and G on Twitter at VOA Stevenson and at G Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending at this hour in Asia, Ghani welcomes Obama's decision on U.S. troops in Afghanistan. Australian conservatives close to parliamentary victory. A powerful typhoon is blowing off the Philippines and it threatens Taiwan. A probe says companies worth $200 million are linked to the Cambodian Prime Minister's family. Lao tourism goes green to boost growth. You'll find much more expanded coverage of these stories at our website, voanews.com, and also on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. South Korea on Thursday welcomed the U.S. decision for the first time to target North Korean leader Kim Jong-un by name for human rights abuses. Kim is among 23 individuals and entities the United States placed on its sanctions blacklist Wednesday for a host of rights violations. The action, which affects any assets under U.S. jurisdiction, follows Pyongyang's fourth nuclear test in January and continuing missile launches. Stephen Norper, senior director of the New York-based Korea Society, tells VOA's Victor Beatty the action is both practical and symbolic.
It first and foremost shows a strategic upping of the human rights concerns to the level of the military concerns about nuclear and missile capabilities. So it is certainly an elevation in terms of trying to draw attention to the human rights situation and really levy something serious. It does prohibit transactions in U.S. currency or doing business directly with the regime, but really it's a name and shame aspect that is an important tool. It has been used in Libya with Gaddafi. It has been used in Liberia with Charles Taylor. It's been used with Mugabe in Zimbabwe. And this is the first time that Kim Jong-un has been specifically named. And I would note, Victor, that it's interesting to see that the cadre of individuals around him who are named and the organizations that were named are those that are part of the state security apparatus, and in particular those that operate the labor camps that house 80 to 120,000 North Koreans in a gulag-type situation. And so it's really designed to rein in the individuals who are active in terms of the imprisonment of North Koreans and the denial of rights there, as well as those who have been leading the effort to silence North Korean refugees once they've made their way abroad.
A senior Obama administration official told reporters that what this report does is it sends a message to the people within the North Korean regime that this will leave you at a significant disadvantage in the future. How so?
It shows a further tightening of measures, you know, beginning with the tightening of sanctions after the nuclear test and the missile test earlier this year. And it demonstrates to others in the international arena that they too should not be doing business with the North Korean regime. That's a moral suasion that's very important and symbolic, but with very real implications in terms of tightening the resources that might be made available to the North Korean regime, their ability to spend those resources. Certainly, it's a step in the direction of saying this is grave concern. It's taken a while for that to be implemented. We had the United Nations Commission of Inquiry report concluded in 2014. We've had this new legislation passed on the Hill in February, and it's good to see State and Treasury now taking stronger steps to try to rein in those perpetrators of human rights involved in the North Korean regime.
Stephen Norper acknowledged the U.S. action carries a risk of further belligerent reaction from Pyongyang, but he said it also sends a clear signal, especially to Chinese companies, that doing business with North Korea will carry a cost. In Bangladesh Thursday, five suspected Islamists armed with crude bombs and machetes attacked a security post near a mosque where hundreds of thousands had gathered for Eid prayers. Two police officers and a woman were killed, and at least nine others were injured. One militant was killed, three arrested. The country's information minister now says the government is not ruling out the possibility of a link between homegrown militant groups and transnational terror outfits. Top Bangladesh officials have previously insisted that local militants or political opposition groups have been carrying out similar attacks. International Edition host Ira Melman asked Michael Kugelman, senior associate for South and Southeast Asia at the Woodrow Wilson Center for Scholars here in Washington, about the climate now in Bangladesh.
Yeah, well, the term I like to use to describe the state of affairs in Bangladesh now is powder keg, a really volatile situation that could well explode in the sense that you could have more terror attacks like the ones you've had over the last few months. I mean, a combination of factors. One is that the society in Bangladesh does not suffer extensive levels of radicalization as Pakistan's does, for example. However, there are institutions, individuals in the country that support violent extremism, and they embrace and articulate the ideologies of extremism that drive terror. So you do have some, you know, religious schools, for example. You have certain clerics that are very hardline Islamist and would not necessarily rule out support for terrorism. So you do have that climate. But on the other hand, you have a very fraught political environment in which the government has consistently taken draconian policies against the political opposition in Bangladesh, which includes the political party Jamaat Islami, which is a conservative Islamist, pretty hard-line group. It's not a terror group, But there are pockets of support in this group for pretty hardline, nasty-type extremist positions. And so the more you have the government in Bangladesh crack down against the likes of the Jamaat Islami, the more the possibility you could have of radicalization. If you have people that already have hardline views, if they see them and their supporters getting targeted, arrested, not in a position to channel grievances peacefully, that could contribute to an environment that could lead to radicalization, extremism, and terrorism.
Is there any way out? Do you see any way out of this hole they've dug?
Well, I mean, the first step is simple, and that's that the government in Bangladesh needs to actually acknowledge and own the terrorism problem in the country. And that should involve acknowledging that, you know, this could be a country that is now in the crosshairs of the likes of Islamic State, which I think it is. Only when you do that and you acknowledge that anything is possible can you be in a position to take credible, actionable, robust measures to deal with the problem. And I think a first step needs to be to probe possible links between local terror groups in Bangladesh and outside ones, because you know, some of the attack in Dhaka on July 1st, it was of such a scale and sophistication that I don't think it could have been done without support from outside groups. These local groups are deadly; they do terrible things, but I don't think they're capable of causing as much loss of life as they are if they have help from outside groups. So the government needs to acknowledge the possibility of collusion between the local groups and the outside groups and take things from there.
So today's announcement might prove a step in the right direction then, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Even though it's just rhetorical and it's just words, certainly you need to start with that. So I think that we should look very favorably upon what we're hearing from the Bangladesh government now.
You may read more about this story on our website at voanews.com, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE for all the latest developments. And you may also follow us on Facebook at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
This is VOA's International Edition. One of the stars of the Broadway smash Hamilton, Leslie Odom Jr., will be leaving the show. But fans of the actor and the singer who played Aaron Burr in the Tony Award-winning show can still enjoy his talents in another venue. That's his self-titled jazz album. As International Edition's David Byrd tells us, Odom brings his vocal range and dynamism to jazz standards by Jerome Kern, Jules Stein, and Frank Loesser.
Leslie Odom Jr. is riding a wave of success. As Aaron Burr, the rival to Lin-Manuel Miranda's Alexander Hamilton in the smash musical Hamilton, Odom won the Tony for Best Leading Actor in a Musical. But now he is leaving the blockbuster show and has just released his self-titled jazz album. It includes 10 classic songs, including Jerome Kern's Look for the Silver Lining, Jules Stein's The Party's Over, and Joey, Joey, Joey from Frank Loesser. Odom says he wanted to create something that would not only entertain people, but would also lift their spirits.
Because as an actor, especially through this Hamilton process, you know, I've thought about empathy more this year than at any other time in my life. And so there was a consciousness about singing something that might encourage somebody at a really hard time.
The actor, singer, and dancer said one of his favorite tunes is Nobody Knows You When You're Down and Out, a blues standard written in 1923 by Jimmy Cox and covered by such greats as Bessie Smith, B.B. King, and Eric Clapton.
You know, Nobody Knows You When You're Down and Out was one of my favorite songs on the thing. And I loved singing it now because I'm so far from down and out. And so I feel like, but I remember being down and out so well.
Mighty strange, but without a doubt, nobody knows you when you're down.
Leslie Odom Jr. says that being part of the Hamilton cast is something he will always remember and will always be thankful for.
I'm very, very grateful to be associated with, you know, with something that has meant this much to people and just something that I can be proud of because it didn't have to go this way. I could have been on some, you know, it just could have gone many other different ways.
The party's over. Time to call it a day. You burst a pretty balloon and taken all away. It's time to wind up.
Odom says he will miss his cast mates, but is excited to see who takes over the role. Hamilton is known for its diverse cast, and Leslie Odom Jr. says he's excited for the actors who will succeed him, especially those of color who have had no other venue to showcase their talents. And his fans can look forward to more of his smooth voice. He has signed a 4-album deal with S-Curve Records, BMG. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
You've been listening to International Edition. We're always found at our website, voanews.com. Like us on Facebook at VOA Now and follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Dan Crafton. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Thank you so much for spending part of your day with us, and have a wonderful day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Today, the world is witness to the greatest refugee crisis since the end of the Second World War, said U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations, Ambassador Samantha Power. And because it is global in scale, anything less than a global response will fall short of addressing it, she said.
Yet rather than spur a united front, a united effort, the challenge of mass displacement has divided the international community and even individual nations, leaving the lion's share of the response to a small number of countries, stretching our humanitarian system to its breaking point and putting millions of people in dire situations at even greater risk.
Obviously, the best way to resolve the crisis is to address the conflict, violence, and repression that is forcing people out of their homes. But in the meantime, we must do more to help, not only for their sake, but for our own security and stability. First, we must meet the vital needs of refugees in the present. Here we are coming up far short, said Ambassador Power. We are seeing record shortfalls in providing essential humanitarian assistance. In 2015, the UN requested approximately $20 billion to provide life-saving aid, only $11 billion of which was funded. This year, the $21 billion that the UN is seeking is less than one quarter funded. And second, we must offer refugee or resettlement to the displaced. By relying on a few countries to bear a disproportionate share of the cost of the crisis, the lives of many refugees are put at risk and may fall prey to violent extremists and members of organized crime. In recognition of the urgent need for all countries to do more, President Obama is convening on September 20th the Leaders' Summit on Refugees on the margins of the 71st UN General Assembly. In addition, the United States is also taking steps to increase our humanitarian aid to refugees and increasing the number of refugees we will resettle in the United States. We call on our friends and partners to follow our lead for the sake of the displaced and the global community.
As an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.